Hello and welcome, everyone. As we are at the bottom of the hour, please be sure to set your chat to go to everyone. Without further ado, Maxime, I think you need no introduction, so let's go ahead and to our guest today.
Wait, where am I? What's happening?
Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast. Every Friday, Lima Charlie hosts Defender Fridays, a 30-minute live fireside chat hosted by our founder, Maxime Lamothe-Brossard, who sits down with an industry expert and hands-on practitioner for an unfiltered conversation on a topic related to cybersecurity defense. These chats are so insightful, it made sense to share them on the podcast as well, 1 week after they originally aired. If you'd like to join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/defender-fridays. And a reminder, this podcast is brought to you by Lima Charlie, maker of the SecOps Cloud Platform, infrastructure for security operations where everything is built API first. You can think of it as a backend for your MSSP that enables you to scale with confidence as your business grows. You can get started today for free at limacharlie.io. Now let's get into it.
Hi, everyone. Today we're talking about analyzing big chunks of source code to find interesting flaws and actually, yes, build real exploits. This is not a thing that is theoretical. This is a thing that I have piles of that I'll be showing and giving some specific advice. What I have done mostly so far is biased towards Linux local kernel privilege escalation because of Google's kernel CTF. It is the most I've ever been nerd sniped in my life, but presuming I have powers now, I'll go ahead and share my screen. Please keep the conversation going. This is not Wednesday Offensive suddenly. This is, it turns out that the goal of offense is to help defense. So I think that finding flaws in your own code base to fix them internally. There was an article just yesterday, day before, about what was it, Hacker News and the token something something stories by popularity in the last week. Token usage, darn it. There was a thing on defense versus offenses, who can use the most tokens, which is an interesting way to think about it. But I think attention, more generally speaking, if you don't pay attention to the code that you are exposing to the outside world, and somebody else does, they're going to have the advantage. So some background on kernel CTF itself. Kernel CTF is a Google-hosted capture the flag, where it essentially, if you can turn a dollar sign into a pound sign, then theoretically you are good to receive on the order of, let's see, $10,500 as a minimum to about $70,000 on the top end. So let me quickly show. Like, they give this certificate that anyone in the world can connect to. And we have the current targets, which are generally the Linux kernel builds with these Google specific configurations. And generally, if you can run one of these, which is as simple as run that target, literally, if you can change this dollar sign to a pound sign and retrieve a flag and show Google how it was done, and technically a little bit more of getting the patch through, reporting nicely to the Linux kernel, security at kernel.org, and you're allowed to use end days, which are things that have been patched, but still patching the upstream Linux kernel, but are not available. But anyway, if you could do that, then you would think, okay, that's money, sweet. However, this is fun because, so they have the, $71,000 for the for a specific subset of the Linux kernel as the target. They also like award novel techniques and such. Here's how to connect. You just saw me doing that. And they actually have a public spreadsheet of results. You think, oh, well, that's just whoever managed to submit that particular day, right? Well, this morning at 5 a.m. Pacific was the last slot opening. I was awake and I was trying to submit and notice these submission times. So it's UTC. So we see 7 seconds into the window is the first submission. 19 seconds into the window. Hi, that was my submission this morning. God damn it. Because 14 seconds was somebody else submitting another one. So it's not actually who can turn the dollar sign into a pound sign. It is a race to do so. I somewhat jokingly, but in all seriousness, also posted in their Discord, the new meta is getting microwave links between the kernel CTF servers and the Google Forms to minimize total distance at the speed of light, because you have to submit to a Google Form. And it turns out that's kind of hard to automate, because it also means automating capturing Google scoped cookies, which is a thing that Google tries to make it really hard to do. So I had a trivial mistake in my auto submission script, and the manual Jeff was a few seconds later, but enough seconds later that I did not become $10,500 richer this morning. Anyway, so with that aside,
why is there slots? Like, why do they not accept, you know, you would think that they would just accept any number of like submissions and check which ones are correct. No.
You might think so. I think the TLDR is because even Google doesn't have infinite money for all of their programs. If you scroll down by submission time, you'll see that it's this column here that actually means it took a slot. I guess there's the COS slot as well. And those ones, this was 22 seconds after, this was 16 seconds after, this was 24 seconds after, this was 10 seconds after. So presumably, and given the fact that there are other rows that did not get awards, there are folks sitting on other O-Day. This is not just a Linux thing. I don't want you to walk away thinking that this is solely a Linux problem, does not affect other operating systems. There is a lot of attack surface running code as a limited user against the kernel. As a minor part of it, system calls. Hey, kernel, can you do this for me? Right? There's a lot of them, and they have very carefully flowing information between the untrusted user land and the kernel land. And if you can leak addresses, if you can trick the kernel into running code of your choosing, I think of the old Indiana Jones Temple of Doom, I think the first one where he swapped out the bag of sand for the statue. That's what I'm thinking of here, of like, hey, kernel, go ahead and check that this code is legit. And before you run it, I swap it out for the code that is not legit. That's time of use, or time of check versus time of use. That's a specific category of exploitation, but it's a fun one. Anyway, so that's the background on kernel CTF itself. Make sure I got the chat active. Feel free to ask questions as we go or chat them in. I'm keeping those active. Anyway, so I've been nerd sniped on this for a while, and I have a little visualization going of the workflow here. This is just Flask, because almost everything is Postgres behind the scenes, and shell scripts, because that scales real well. It means I have to care about very few things. So I was talking to a contact at Anthropic today and double checking. You're not going to out me, right? So it sure looks like I have 3 Anthropic Claude Max 20X subscriptions, which I do. It sure looks like I have 3 OpenAI Pro subscriptions, which I do. And there may be some load balancing happening automatically, because this is often Claude in a loop, or Codex in a loop, or Gemini in a loop. You can tell that I am waiting for my new allocation of Gemini credits, because they go quick. Anecdotally, by the way, yes, Anthropic goes a heck of a lot quicker on credits than OpenAI does. This is the other side of, yes, Sam Altman bought all of the NVMe and all of the memory. But on the bright side, if you want to use OpenAI, he has all of the memory and all of the NVMe, and nobody else can buy any. So other people are GPU starved relatively. So putting that whole thing aside, we now have the worker groups and the stages to discuss. If you try to go from, hey, here's the kernel, build me a working privilege escalation exploit, there are so many ways it could go that, one, you're going to have the problem of that's not a verifiable thing necessarily. It might be making stuff up, aka hallucinating. So I want to have verifiable rewards, which is a whole phrase for large language models. So stage 1 and stage 1A are essentially different variations of, here is a chunk of Linux kernel code. Now I want you to search for bugs within that, essentially make wild, crazy accusations as to flaws here. So here's the actual shell script used. Stage 1A is agentic. When I first did this, it was just here's the prompt with a chunk of source code. And actually, that was it at first. Later on, I did enrichment of, oh, you called these other functions. Let me include that in the prompt as well. But no tool use. It was just the prompt. And the output in a specific formatted manner was the wild accusation of what I refer to as a finding internally. So we have like dry run and max jobs parallelism and such. And here's the Postgres piece of it, which is essentially the best line in Postgres. Select for update, skip locked. You get queuing built into Postgres. So it selects an assignment that is pending and calls dibs on it, and nobody else doing that same select will see it. That's a queue. And it's built into Postgres, and it means I can run this same workflow on any number of machines, generally speaking. I just need compute and I need tokens, which is a nice thing. I'll have other bits on this. Here we go. Here's the actual prompt to start off with. You were reviewing Linux kernel Git source code for vulnerabilities. Here's a different the path that you're working with, the subsystem that you're working with, the capabilities. This source is from this exact kernel version. Here's the chunk. And a little bit of the enrichment that is, hey, if it calls a function and it's fewer than 50 lines, I'll include that function as well. But you have kernel access. You can read. This is not making code that it's then compiling and running inside of Kemu. That's stage two. But it has some hints as to things to search for. Of course, I did not build this prompt myself. It was changed over time. But I do have one shout out for. So, when it's done, it will say, here is the finding start, finding end, use it in this format, which I then pick up out of the agent response. I also encourage you, if you're doing any type of this, is to have the agent make its own suggestions that you can later collate, put together, like essentially do plan mode and say, hey, look through the last 30 days worth of suggestions, categorize them by perceived utility and ease of implementation, and I'll choose some subset to implement. So you're kind of constantly hill climbing towards a better way forward. All right, and then a little bit of be skeptical, don't just make stuff up, right? Don't hallucinate, part of the prompt. That gets rid of the hallucination problem.
you solved it.
Yeah, we solved that problem. Let me briefly bring up stage two before I go back. There's stage two minimization and there's stage two validate. This one gets the wild, crazy accusation and says, hey, we have a finding. You were trying to validate this finding. It might be making stuff up. So your job is to write a C proof of concept that triggers this vulnerability so that a VM, Kemu, KVM, detects some flaw. You cannot mark this as validated unless there is a case and trace and oops, etc., from this existing shell script. So I have a couple different copies of Linux kernel built with, like, again, kernel address sanitizer, which I would encourage you, if you're doing this for your own projects, address sanitizer and a few other things are ways to build C programs that are far more noticing of any runtime memory flaws. That way you don't have to get to like, hey, I popped a shell, popped calc.exe. It's just, hey, there was some flaw with memory allocation, memory reuse, use after free, double free, etc. It'll cause it to crash as of that moment in a reproducible way. So you know, okay, this actually solved, this actually demonstrated a flaw. So that is essentially stage two, where it has like a little bit more of the instructions as we go. And at the end, stage two suggestions as well. This time, since it's agentic, it gets a work directory, put everything inside. By the way, it is literally just my Dropbox folder, which now has like 700,000 files inside. I'll solve that problem later. Save the result to a file, and then have stage two result, which I pick up essentially via regular expression, which is further down below. So that gets us through stage one and two.
Before we you get into the next stage, I'm kind of curious to hear a little bit. You mentioned like, hey, I didn't write this prompt. It was like added over time. What was your process for writing it? Is it that you use an AI to write it? And the flow itself, was it a lot of iteration? Like, what's your lesson to yourself?
So The original stages 1, 2, and 3 were essentially my brainstorming back and forth. Using Postgres to begin with was my brainstorming back and forth because I wanted to, if you're doing Claude Code in the Loop or similar, you want to have reasonable sized chunks of a job because it's not going to work forever. And if it did, if you ever had, if the system crashed, because every once in a while, all of these agentic uses is like Codex dash dash YOLO. I'm pretty sure that you're only allowed to run Claude with dash dash dangerously skipped permissions, as far as I'm aware, because that's the only way I ever run it. So every once in a while, the agent gets confused and runs this privilege escalation attempt on the host, which is Linux, and crashes it. Like, this stuff happens. So this is why you have the database be elsewhere. It started off with, stage 1, 2, and 3. Stage 1 was non-agentic at first. It was just that prompt. And eventual hill climbing, it changed over time. The models did look at the prompt itself. The stage 1 suggestions helped improve that prompt over time. We do have a minor bit of stage 2M. Okay, we cause a crash. Cool. Minimize it to the least number of lines of code and the least amount of complexity before we pass on to stage 3, where it attempts to actually exploit. That's minor. Like, it's just a prompt saying fewer lines of code, please. Less complexity, please. If there's an unused import, remove the unused import. There's also, after you get a proof of concept, minimize that exploit. That might take a while. That's fine. I'm not as focused on it right now because I want to get proof of work. Switching over to, I mean, well, I got to show the shiny thing. One of my favorite things is in the dashboard, little SON key visualization. So entered pipeline is the number of findings that came out of the assignments, which is the chunks of source code. So 7,600 to work with, many of them saying, yeah, it doesn't work. Some in progress, some, yeah, that code exists, but I can't reach it in this Qemu KVM environment, like flaws in VMware virtual machine communication interface, VMCI. Can't reach that. Cool, but here are those that I could confirm. Some subset were actually exploited, many were dead end. Like, yes, this is a flaw, but it's denial of service only. Or some that are still pending. And then we have the overall workflow of 7,800 wild accusations, 1,000 of which caused mostly KSAN violations, 213 being some level of exploited, which brings us to the findings tab. By the way, if you can re reproduce these flaws just from the finding title, then congratulations, that's literally 0 day. But we have the stage here. Mostly it's useful to look for, hey, the stuff that made it through validation is the stuff I start to care about. Until then, I don't terribly care. All right, that's a wild accusation. That might be a hallucination. It might be unreachable, et cetera. We have the status here. This model is the original model that found it, not because it's very common for a given finding to have been discovered with stage 1 being Gemini. And then OpenAI Codex did the validation, and then Claude Opus did the exploitation. Right? That's not an uncommon thing. And when it gets to stage 3, by the way, I have every time I get KSAN violation, that sounds valuable to me. So every model, every top tier frontier model gets a shot at it. So until then, it's just one model doing making a finding or assignment. But hey, build a proof of concept. That's hard. So better to have multiple shots at it simultaneously. Anecdotally, OpenAI is way more hesitant to do that unless you do the verification. Like, it's straight up exploit dev, right? Hey, it's for a CTF. Does get you surprisingly far, but not all the way necessarily. Then we have on the exploit succeeded. I like showing the actual number there, 83. But that is often information leak. Like, hey, you leaked a kernel pointer. You got a kernel ASLR leak, which is just one offset that is one defense between user land and kernel. There's a lot of those for every one of the write access or use after free that could theoretically allow for local privilege escalation. So, to be clear, I do not have 83 ways of getting root on Linux. I have, I think, five.
So I'm curious. I don't know if you have that information, but like Mythos was like announced and talked about, like last week.
Yep.
Do you have, I think they published some cost estimate, right? Like of how much it costs to run.
Oh, yeah.
Did you compare that to your pipeline and like what kind of ROI you're getting?
So, spoilers, these are Claude Max subscriptions, which is subscription-based, not token-based. If you do the math on how much you get, if you actually use all of your weekly allocation, on a $200 subscription buys you about 10 grand worth of API usage. That is true across Anthropic and OpenAI. Gemini is interesting. They do daily resets. They have no weekly. They have no 5-hour usage block. I am likely in the trillions of tokens, which I don't say lightly, given...
I'm more trying to figure out, like... hypothetically, I have no idea of what the actual number is, but like, hey, Mythos found 10 kernel bugs.
Yeah, and it was like $20,000 for that run against.
Right.
I have it a rough equivalent of like dollars per vuln? Is that or?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's exactly.
That I have spent the equivalent of in API fees would be interesting as well because I'm somewhere, I'm definitely into six figures because this has been going on for a couple of months and across all the different subscriptions. I'm in the six figures of API usage equivalent. To be clear, I have not spent six figures myself, but I am near the edge of hitting the fifth figure. I did the math at the time. It was about $1,700 when I had all of my subscriptions. I have since let a couple lapse, Z.AI, GLM, which is open weights out of China. Do I have a startup template I use when I'm starting up AI projects? I do not the way that I have this done, but I have other tabs that I want to go through before we close to give you some starting points. I will also toss links in Slack. Yes, Kickstarter, give me all of your tokens. Boring Technology is a wonderful presentation. TLDR, you have 3 innovation tokens as a company. Don't spend them on crappy stuff because you have lots of different problems and you could choose to solve them with lots of different technologies, whatever is best in breed for every one thing. However, you've spent a lot of your innovation tokens on just being used to different things. We use Redis. We also use WordPress. We also use Flask. We also, like, at some point you don't have innovation left for your actual core thing, right? Cost per tech is cheap. That'd mean use a lot of technologies. It turns out that's not true. So use the same thing over and over and over again. Have fewer problems. Use Postgres everywhere is a little bit of the TLDR for the Boring Technology Club. The skip locked thing that I mentioned with Postgres using as a queuing system has a good blog post to get you started there as well. This is just a Amazon hosted RDS is the name of that particular service. And it costs me less than $20 a month. So I'd rather not have to worry about hosting my own Postgres server, though I could, but my uptime is not great since the hosts get exploited and crashed all the time. Fun fact, don't set up your host that you use for this to be full disk encryption because then you have to touch a laptop every time it crashes and reboots. So anyway, I have a few more things on essentially Claude code in a loop, which is very close to what I'm doing here with the assignments as well. Decompilation is another wonderful spot for this. A lot of this comes from like matching decompilation in the gaming world. With hashing, I cannot reverse or dehash Maxime's hash, but I can take unlimited, if I have the hash from him, I can take unlimited guesses as to what his password is, apply the hashing algorithm and see if the hash I stole, allegedly, is the hash I just created. If so, I cracked the hash, as we say. Decompilation is usually a best guess at making source that kind of looks like it. But matching decompilation is using the exact same compiler and taking unlimited guesses per basic block, essentially per function, using that compiler and see if you end up with the same assembly. If so, you essentially guessed the source. So kind of like hashing, way more token intensive, but this doesn't have to be a human doing it. And therefore it's incredibly powerful. As an aside of my my next side quest, because there are plenty of side quests in this world, did you know that it's much easier to decompile debug code, as in debug compiled code, And did you know that Windows itself has debug compilations going up to Windows 10, 16.07 or so? And that's just Visual Studio used to compile chunks of C and C++ that matches resulting files that anybody with MSDN subscription can get. Did I mention I have a Visual Studio subscription? So yeah, that's the other side project once I have unlimited tokens to work with. Give me all your tokens, by the way. Anyway, a little bit more on kernel address sanitizer. And I think that's the main thing I wanted to get over. We have 5 minutes left. I can go and dive into any particular area, but let's leave it for questions at this moment.
Just a thought that popped in my mind that I thought is kind of hilarious is if you squint and you look at, you know, the way you're looking for those vulnerabilities, I would describe it as it's like Bitcoin mining that's actually useful. Meaning, yeah. You know, you're throwing GPUs at a task that pays you at the end when you find needles. Like, yeah, that's
a decent analogy. Yeah, I mean, I have problems otherwise with cryptocurrency, but there's actually a really good older blog post on fuzzing where they talk about, like, it's like going mining. First, we find the richer sections of ore, then we refine it, and then we make the final bars of the finished product, and that works well. Like, find the more interesting areas. Oh, by the way, the best benchmark is your own. So Vulnbench is the as yet unreleased. If there is a chunk of source code that any model found a flaw inside, then I test every model against it. Like, it's part of the denominator. So out of the 151 chunks that ever found a flaw, Gemini Flash currently has the highest score. But Gemini Flash also makes lots of wild accusations, so it has a high false positive rate. I think, there we go. Detect percentage, find percentage, false positive rate, and new bug percentage. There we go. I think, oh, no. This is not the one I want. Darn. I did this
You're
just before
have to
we started
this.
The call, and I ran out of my 5 hour usage. I'm not going to make it in the next 3 minutes and log into another account and have it finished. So I'll have to leave it at that. It's a teaser for, I might post publicly about Vulnbench because I think it's a useful thing. And I would love to see Mythos be higher up on that list. Sure.
Very cool. I'm curious. So somebody mentioned, like for me, like I don't do vulnerability research, but I feel
Neither
like there's
I,
a huge, right. But I feel like there's a super interesting part, which is, how you split that pipeline. Like, did you hit anything that you kind of like didn't expect as you did these changes to your pipeline and that structure? Like, any pro tips from somebody that's kind of done the hard work?
So if it is a binary, so finding the line between where it's okay to live on vibes and where it's okay that you need a hard gate that is based on actual code, is a big part of the balancing structure here. So yes, there are wild accusations findings at the very beginning that I don't care about them until it causes some kernel address sanitizer violation. That is my gate to the rest of the pipeline. So if you're dealing with a large C++ manual memory management code base, address sanitizer can be a really damn good starting point. And there are other sanitizers with other compilers to work with, but that's a good starting point of, like, if you can cause a violation in that, that's a thing worth knowing about, it's a thing worth fixing. So out of the, what is it, 88 different exploited findings, I think 88 out of 88 is something that I should eventually report to security@kernel.org. But very few of those are directly useful for exploitation for local privilege escalation, which is fine and unexpected. On your internal side, you don't care so much about stage 3, stage 1 and stage 2. Get chunks of code, and I'm probably going to have stage 2A, which is agentic. You have assigned this chunk of source code, and your job is to make a validated finding in one step, right? So I could collapse it down. And honestly, internally, if you can say, and even have one more AI do the triage here, hey, this input caused this crash, find the flaw in the source code and propose a solution. That's now two stages. Find flaws and make them patchable internally. If it is a website, then we have similar things here, but essentially put it through burp and convince burp that it's a problem is a fair way, because they spend a lot of skill points down the skill tree of finding out if this is an actual flaw or not. Wild accusations being synonymous with Jeff. Yeah, thanks. yes, there's absolutely floods of bloat AI reports. There's a little bit of talk recently of, hey, if you're submitting a bug bounty, we're going to charge you $25 to submit to us, mostly so that it costs you a little bit if you're just flooding everywhere. That is not the direction that money is supposed to flow for bug bounties. That is my biggest problem with it. But I mean, we've had the same problem with spam in email over the years and talking about, like, well, maybe it costs you one pico dollar to send an email. That way it's fine for regular use. Your carrier can cover it for you. But if you're sending a million emails a day, that starts to be costly. We're past the top of the hour, so any last question before we before Maxime kicks me out? It's pulling me away. I feel it.
Awesome. Well, look, I think that was a speed run through something super deep and interesting. I feel like there's like four topics within that could easily be their own hours. Thank you so much for showing us that. I think it gave a ton of people different ideas about stuff they could do. So this is the best kind of Defender Fridays. I think people probably know how to reach you, but like,
how do you prefer to be reached? Hi everyone. I teach for SANS and consult or whatever. Sure, I exist in places. I'm also Jeff at RogueValleyInfosec.com and Jeff McDuncan on all the socials and such. Sure.
Awesome.
I exist as a consultant. Yeah. Capitalism. Yeah.
Hey, all got to make a living.
Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Well, yeah. Thanks again. That was super cool. And that flew by. We'll see everybody next week for next Defender Fridays. See you, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, friends.
And that brings us to the end of another Defender Fridays discussion. Support our show by sharing your favorite episodes with a friend, subscribe or give us a rating on whatever podcast platform you're listening from. If you want to be a part of the conversation and join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/defender-fridays. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you in the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.